This is an exciting diet. It really has some miraculous healing powers. It's easy to describe this diet, and I'd like to read a text to you that will be our key text for this afternoon. And it's found in Ecclesiastes, the 3rd chapter, and we'll read the 14th verse. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before Him. Now this gives us our clue as to what the topic is going to cover this afternoon. I know that whatsoever God doeth, and that certainly includes the food that He made for us, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before Him. Now the interesting thing is, when we take certain things out of our food and reject certain things and decide what we want to eat out of the food, we're going to end up sick. And then when we put it all back together and eat it just the way that God made it for us, a miracle starts taking place. And all those results that I read this morning about the miracle that took place in those patients' lives, how their blood pressure dropped, how their blood sugar, how they got off their high blood pressure pills, how they got off their diabetic medication, how the ones that had heart disease could only walk, could walk for miles. And I could tell you story after story after story of tremendous miracles that have taken place in people's lives when they get back on the diet that God has given to them, the whole complete diet with nothing taken out and nothing added. Now, it may seem like a moot point if you remove something out of the food and use that in your diet, or if you add something back to your diet, but it may seem like a moot point to you to remove something from one of the Ten Commandments, or remove something from the Bible that you don't like. But this isn't the way that God works. God likes His Word and His laws left totally intact. And we are to follow Him that way. Now, a natural diet, as we're going to describe it this afternoon, is a diet that is the food as grown. The whole grains, the vegetables, the fruit, the nuts, the seeds, the food is growing. In other words, you can recognize it as food that's growing. It's not something that has been extracted out of the natural food. Now, as an example of an extract, let's look at sugar just for a moment. Sugar has been removed from a natural product, like the sugar cane, like the sugar beet, and you remove all the bulk and all the fiber, all the vitamins and all the minerals, and you're left over with nothing but a pure, white, granulated product that you might know as granulated table sugar. Now, this is a refined product. I could spend several hours with you this afternoon telling you of all the hazards that go into using a refined product like this. How that you deplete your body of the minerals necessary to metabolize that sugar if you don't take those minerals in with the sugar. How that it'll raise the fat level in your blood with all the implications of heart disease and atherosclerosis and hardening of the arteries. How it causes dental cavities, and we could go on and on and on with all the implications that are involved with sugar, from high blood pressure to cancer. But you've probably all heard many lectures about the problems with using sugar in your diet. And I know this thing has been covered quite a bit in the past, and Ellen White certainly covers it very sufficiently in her writings about the detrimental effects of sugar. And she does say that a little sugar could be used in canning to sweeten things, although I think there's better ways that we have now of sweetening things. But using a very small amount of sugar, whatever, it seems to be the way that we should go, and possibly even learning to eliminate it altogether. Now, the area I'd like to get into for a brief time this afternoon is in the area of fat metabolism. And what it is that is involved when you remove the fat out of natural products. Same philosophy. You take the oil out of the grain, whether it's corn or whether it's wheat, or whether you use nuts or seeds and remove the fat from them. It's the same thing. You're removing a substance that we call in chemistry a triglyceride. And pure oil is nothing more than a triglyceride. It's a pure chemical. And you may call it corn oil, you may call it safflower oil, you may call it olive oil, you may call it butter, you may call it lard, whatever it is, it's a pure chemical known as a triglyceride. Now these triglycerides vary just a little bit, so that some of them are more saturated than others. In the animal kingdom, we find more saturated fat. But in the vegetable kingdom, we find more unsaturated fat. But there's always exceptions to the rule. You find saturated fat in a coconut. You find saturated fat in other vegetable products. There is no hard line you can draw and say that this fat always comes from the animal and this fat always comes from the vegetable. They're intermixed. Many animals have polyunsaturated fat. And the fats are similar. You can't tell them apart chemically. So you can't say that this particular fatty acid or this particular triglyceride came out of an animal. It could have come out of a plant. They're so very similar like that, that fat is really fat. There's really no difference between it except that the animal kingdom tends to have more saturated fat, the vegetable kingdom more polyunsaturated fat. Now, cholesterol always comes from the animal kingdom. You cannot get it out of the vegetable kingdom. Contrary to everything you've always heard all your life, coconuts do not have cholesterol in them. Cashews do not have cholesterol in them. So you must separate out and understand that cholesterol only comes from animal products. Now, this is one point that with the conditioning patients there at Weimar, I go over and over and over with them about this, that vegetable products do not have cholesterol in them. And yet, I'll come another day and say, now, do we find cholesterol in the coconut? Oh yes, there's two or three of them that are just sure you find cholesterol in the coconut. There is no cholesterol in any vegetable product. And that's a rule that you need to lay down. If it belongs to the vegetable kingdom, there's no cholesterol in it. There may be saturated or unsaturated fat in it, if it's in the vegetable kingdom. Okay, now it makes a big difference. When you remove the fat out of a natural product, it then becomes an oily, fatty, greasy substance. Versus the way it comes in nature, it's always water-soluble. Now this makes a big difference because you look at a substance like the avocado. If you should take some avocado and spread it on a piece of paper, it will dry on that piece of paper and you can hold it up to the light and you won't see a grease stain. But if you should spread a little oil on that paper, you will see a grease stain on there. The same way with cream. If you put a little cream on there, it'll dry, a little white dried area on the thing, there won't be a greasy area. With butter, would you see a greasy area? Most assuredly you would. Butter is a free fat. Cream is not a free fat. We don't put cream in the category of an oily, fatty, or greasy substance. Neither is milk. You can mix them with water. You can mix avocado with water. You can mix the nuts if you grind them up with water. You can take all of the natural products and mix them with water. But the greasy and oily things you cannot mix with water. You cannot mix butter with water. You cannot mix margarine with water or any kind of oil. You name it, and you cannot mix it with water. It's a greasy and oily substance. Now, it makes a difference in your system the way you take these fats in. If you take them in the way that God made them, or the way that man comes along and extracts them out of the natural product. Now, let me illustrate that by telling you a study that was just done and published in the medical journal Lancet, where they took a group of men and they divided them into two groups, and they had equal cholesterol levels in both groups. Group one, they put on milk and cream. And then they figured out the exact amount of butter fat that was in that milk and cream. And to group two, they fed them the butter. Now, both groups were getting identical amounts of saturated fat. Both groups were getting identical amounts of butter. Identical amounts of butter fat and cholesterol in both groups. One group was getting it in a water-soluble form like milk and cream, and the other group was getting it in a fat substance, an oily, greasy, fatty substance, butter. Now, the researcher checked their cholesterol level after they had been on this diet a number of weeks. And the group on the milk and the cream, their cholesterol level went down. With all the butter fat and all the cholesterol they were getting in this diet, their cholesterol went down. But the group on the butter, their cholesterol level shot and went sky high. Now, what does Ellen White say about the diet? It says fruits, grains, vegetables, nuts, with a little milk or cream makes an ideal diet. She doesn't say fruits, grains, vegetables, and nuts, and butter, or grease, or oil, or anything like that, any fatty or oily substance. Now, let me tell you one other experiment that was just done. This is an experiment I did myself. We did it on a number of students. And it's an experiment that I'm doing for a PhD thesis. We took this group of students and we fed one group eggs, two eggs a day. Now, these students were on a cholesterol-free, grease-free diet. They weren't getting any fatty or oily substance in their diet at all. They were on the diet that God has recommended that we use. Fruits, grains, vegetables, and nuts. And to that diet, we added two eggs a day. And then another group, we had exactly the same diet. We added the two eggs a day, plus we had them eat two little pats of margarine with those two eggs. In other words, one pat for each egg. So really we had three groups here. One was our control group that was on the simple natural diet, as Ellen White recommends it. Number two was on the simple natural diet, as Ellen White recommends it, and they were getting two eggs a day. And group number three was on the same diet, but they were adding to their eggs the two little squares of margarine. Now, there was only one group that was getting the oily and greasy substance. And when the experiment was over, after a number of weeks, when we checked the cholesterol levels, there was no difference between the cholesterol levels of the group that wasn't getting eggs in their diet and the group that was eating two eggs a day. There was no significant difference between them. Eggs do not raise your cholesterol level. But then when we looked at the group that was getting their two eggs a day and eating it with two little pats of margarine, not very much margarine, just a little bit to put on each egg, their cholesterol was significantly elevated. Anytime you add grease or oil in a free form to cholesterol, you're going to get an elevation in cholesterol level. If you eat the food the way that God made it, the simple natural milk or cream or eggs, you are not going to get that cholesterol raising in your blood. But if you add a little grease to it, then you're in real trouble. Now, what does Ellen White say about our food? How should we eat it? Second Testimony, page 63. You should keep grease out of your food. It defiles any preparation of food you may make. Now, no matter how you want to interpret that word grease, if you want to say that's only animal fat, that doesn't include vegetable oil, that's fine with me, but you still have to see the results that it doesn't make any difference. Whether it's margarine or butter or whatever it is, it's going to shoot the cholesterol way up when you add any fatty substance to cholesterol, to an animal product. So if you eat your animal products with grease or oil or any other fatty substance, you're going to get a marked elevation in your blood cholesterol. There is no question about it. This research has been done for 60 and 70 years. We've known that and overlooked it. The early researchers tried to give pure cholesterol to animals to produce hardening of the arteries in them. Because they found the cholesterol in the arteries, they said cholesterol is the villain. It causes atherosclerosis and hardening of the arteries. So let's feed it to the animals and see if we can't produce it. So they fed these animals cholesterol, and they fed it to them by the peck, and they couldn't produce atherosclerosis and hardening of the arteries. And then one researcher one day happened to sit down and mix the cholesterol up with just a little bit of oil. And he fed that to his experimental animals, and the cholesterol level in those animals shot up immediately to a very high level. It always takes that oily and greasy substance to cause that cholesterol to go up. And the way the cholesterol is made in nature, it does not cause a rise in the cholesterol level. It's only when you add grease to the diet. Now, Ellen White, when she's speaking of grease in the diet, she speaks of it specifically in this manner. Councils on Health, page 354. The grease cooked in the food renders it difficult of digestion. Now we're talking about cooking with grease, making a casserole. Now you may want to put oil in it, or you may want to put fat in it, you may want to put butter in it, or margarine, or whatever oily and greasy substance you want to put in there, it's going to render that food difficult of digestion. Now this seemed to be the main point Ellen White was making right here, was that the grease cooked in the food renders it difficult of digestion. Now, on the same page, she says, we do not think fried potatoes are helpful, for there is more or less grease or butter used in preparing them. Councils on Health, Councils on Diets and Foods, page 350. Butter should not be placed on the table. It will obstruct digestion. Now here she talks about grease and butter obstructing digestion and making your food difficult to digest. Now, there are some who like to say, oh, but polyunsaturated fat is very digestible. It's good for you. You can fry your potatoes or your veggie burgers or whatever you want to fry in it, and it makes them very digestible. But these people that are saying it have not had their basic first fundamental class in physiology of the digestive tract. Because you can go to any textbook in the nation in physiology and read where fat is fat. It obstructs digestion identically the same. It doesn't make any difference whether it's oil or whether it's grease or lard or whatever kind of fat you want to name. Now, the physiology textbook that I like and I have in my library is Physiology of the Digestive Tract by Dr. Davenport. Dr. Davenport is really considered the father of digestive physiology. It's a textbook that's used by most of the medical schools in the nation. And I'd like to quote to you what Dr. Davenport says about any fatty or greasy substance. And he names a number of them. Meals composed largely of fat of any kind. Corn oil, cottonseed oil, olive oil, butter, lard, or fatty acids may remain in the stomach 20 hours. So here you have it. Meals composed largely of fat of any kind. It doesn't make any difference whether it's corn oil or whether it's lard that you fry your potatoes in. Or whether it's safflower oil or beef tallow. It doesn't make a whit of difference as far as obstructing digestion is concerned. And when Ellen White says, the grease cooked in the food renders it difficult digestion. You're being very naive if you say, well, I can use safflower oil to fry my potatoes with, and I'll never miss a fried potato. Or I can fry my veggie burgers in corn oil, and it makes it very digestible. The dictionary in Ellen White's day always labeled oil and grease. The definition for grease was any fatty, oily, or unctuous substance. Anything that is greasy. And I would like to tell you that Ellen White mentions oil, Counsels on Diets 3, 4, 5, speaking about using it in the salads along with vinegar, and she speaks about it obstructing digestion. She says, fermentation takes place in the stomach and the food does not digest, but decays or putrefies. As a consequence, the blood is not nourished, but becomes filled with impurities and liver and kidney difficulties appear. Now you can see, if you're using a lot of oil in your salads, plus a lot of grease in the rest of your food, it gets down there in your stomach and sits in that warm environment for a long time down there in your stomach. You know, food can spoil if you leave it out of the refrigerator overnight. But if you put it there at 100 degrees in a real moist area down there in your stomach, it can spoil much more rapidly. And here she says that these decayed products that are spoiling and fermenting down there in your stomach, going out into your intestine and then being absorbed and filtering around, can cause liver and kidney difficulties. And all those putrefied products have to be passed off. Some of them are going to come out through your lungs. And no matter how clean you scrub your teeth, you're still going to have halitosis and bad breath. Now, the early Adventist church understood this point well. There was no question, there was no controversy about using grease in the diet. And oil was considered grease. Now, let's make that point perfectly clear before we go on. I would like to quote to you, first of all, let's quote from Dr. Merritt Kellogg. He was a half-brother of John Harvey Kellogg. Merritt Kellogg wasn't known quite as well as his brother John Harvey Kellogg. And Will Kellogg was probably best known of all of them because he was the one that was behind all the breakfast cereals that we have today. But Dr. Merrick Kellogg, a half-brother to John and Will, wrote in the book, The Hygienic Family Physician, published in 1873, on page 21, he speaks of fats and oils. And he says, these substances should never be made use of as food, for they do not contain the proper elements to build up the vital tissues. And he goes on and says, greasy and oily foods is particularly bad in this disease and should be avoided. He's speaking of treating tuberculosis. He says it's particularly bad to use greasy and oily foods. And then in 1907, Pacific Press put out a book that was edited and published and written by a number of the most competent authorities that the Adventist Church had at that time. Many authors put it together. And here's what that book said. It was called Home and Health. Free fat is not only difficult of digestion itself, but it hinders the digestion of other foods with which it is mixed. Now, I like to always quote from Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, too. And Dr. John Harvey Kellogg published a book called Shall We Slay to Eat? And this was published in 1906, reading from page 184. The chief objection to the use of oil, lard, tallow, butter, and other forms of grease. You see, John Harvey Kellogg says the chief objection to the use of oil, lard, tallow, butter, and other forms of grease. You see, he labels oil as grease. Is that they present the fat in an artificially concentrated form in which it does not harmonize with the other elements of the food while undergoing digestion in the stomach. Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, speaking more on the use of fat in the food, and Dr. Kellogg was 100 years before his time. Ellen White speaks of Dr. Kellogg, and she says that he was God's chosen physician. Now, this was until he rebelled and apostatized after about the year 1888. But prior to that time, his writings are very harmonious with the spirit of prophecy. And we can lay them almost side by side with the modern textbooks of physiology today, and Dr. Kellogg was just about as accurate as you can get. Now, let me show you this. Here Dr. Kellogg is speaking, writing in the Health Reformer, May 1877. The objection is not against fat per se, but against taking it in a free state. When taken in the form which nature presents them, enclosed in cells in such vegetable foods as maize, oatmeal, nuts, and some fruits, fats are a wholesome and nutritious element of food. It is only when separated from the other elements and taken in a free state that they become unwholesome. When taken into the stomach in the form which nature furnishes them, they offer no obstacle to digestion. It is only when taken as free fats that they become a means of producing disturbance of the digestive function. Now listen to this. It makes little or no difference, so far as the interference with digestion is concerned, whether the fat is animal or vegetable. Now, does that fit in with the modern-day textbooks of physiology of the digestive tract, where Dr. Davenport is saying there's no difference between corn oil or lard or olive oil? They obstruct digestion just as much. Dr. John Harvey Kellogg knew what he was speaking about here. They were trying to make a margarine in Dr. Kellogg's day. And here's what he had to say about their efforts. The persistent efforts of individuals to discover some cheap vegetable substitute for butter and lard are painfully ludicrous. Nothing would be gained if such substitutes could be discovered, for they would be open to the same objections as the articles to which they were intended to replace. He goes on and talks about olive oil and cottonseed oil. And when he speaks about cottonseed oil, he says, if people will use grease of some kind, we would recommend vegetable lard in preference to hog's lard. In other words, if you're going to use oil of some kind, he says he'd rather have you use the vegetable lard rather than using hog's lard. But he says, nevertheless, we do not recommend the use of any free fat. Well, let's go on here and read from Dr. Daniel Kress. Dan and Loretta Kress, both physicians, many years missionaries in the Adventist Church, many years health educators. They made this statement, writing in the little book, Dietetic Errors, Their Relation to Disease, published 1904. The chief objection to the use of oil, lard, tallow, butter, and other forms of grease. All the early Adventist writers used the term grease synonymous with oil. There is no difference between grease and oil as far as the early Adventist health educators were concerned. Mrs. E.E. Kellogg, writing in the book Practical Manual of Hygiene and Temperance, published 1885, the recipe book, she says, iron should not be smeared with grease. If necessary to oil them at all, they should only be wiped out with an oil cloth very carefully. In other words, you don't liberally grease down your pans if you're going to, if it's necessary to put any kind of oil on them at all, you should wipe it on very carefully so you don't get a lot on there. Very, very sparingly. Now I'd like to read to you a statement from Dr. Owen S. Parrott, longtime Adventist educator and writer in the denomination. And Dr. Parrott makes this statement. Picking up my worn copy of Ministry of Healing, I turn to page 298 and read, the oil as eaten in the olive is far preferable to animal fat. It serves as a laxative. Its use will be found beneficial to consumptives. And it is healing to an inflamed, irritated stomach. Did the prophet use this language purposely, or was she speaking a medical truth unconscious of all its significance? Why did she not simply recommend olive oil? As eaten in the olive, what's the difference? She had spoken time and again about keeping grease off of our foods. What did she mean? You see, Dr. Parrott here is separating out olive oil from the olive. And you can read Ellen White's writings from one cover to the other, and you'll never find where she recommends the use of olive oil at all. Never. The only way she ever says is the oil as eaten in the olive, not the oil as eaten out of the olive. And it makes a tremendous difference the way you get it in your diet. Whether you get it the way that God made it, bound with the carbohydrates and the proteins and the vitamins and the minerals in that olive, or whether you get it in a free state, taken out, just like butter, or just like margarine in the experiments I told you about, when you combined it with the cholesterol, what happened to your cholesterol level? Not only that, when you take free fat, whether it's margarine, whether it's oil, whether it's butter, whatever it is, into your stomach, it's lighter than the rest of your food. And what doesn't coat your food and penetrate into your food and make it hard to digest floats up to the top. And here you have a layer of fat up there on top of your stomach. And after all the rest of the food is finally pushed out of your stomach, here comes this layer of fat, and you're just feeding your intestine nothing but pure fat. Now this isn't my idea, so don't quote me on it. This is Dr. Davenport writing in his textbook of physiology of the digestive tract. Let me read that to you. Fat forms large drops unsuitable for gastric digestion. Liquid or semi-solid fats float in gastric contents, and in a man in the upright position, the fat in a broken emulsion empties after the rest of the meal has emptied. Friends, it's time we get back and start reading a few textbooks of physiology. Many of our nutritionalists seem to feel that the stomach is down there churning and mixing up everything just as though it's a cement mixer. And it's not. The upper part of the stomach hardly moves at all. And that fat will form a layer of fat up there on top, separated from the rest of the food. Let's go on and read what Dr. Owen S. Parrott has to say. While medical director of Paradise Valley Sanitarium, I learned what Sister White meant. We had as assistant matron a lady, Rebecca Hannaford, who a few years before had cooked in the White home at Elmshaven. One day in their home, she boiled some sweet potatoes, brushed some oil on them, and nicely finished them in a baking pan in the oven. When Sister White happened by and saw them, she very gently said, "We don't eat fried foods." Miss Hannaford replied, "These have been baked in the oven." Sister White would never stoop to argue. She simply repeated in her soft, kindly way, "We don't eat fried foods." This just gives you a little background into the early Adventist church, how that they were totally opposed to grease and oil. I have had the privilege of reviewing literally hundreds of old Seventh-day Adventist recipes. And any of you that have old Seventh-day Adventist books, health books, recipe books, printed back around the turn of the century and before, should get them down and verify the statement that I'm making. That they did not use free fat in these recipes almost invariably. Now, and occasionally a recipe would have a little bit of butter in it, but Ellen White, in one of the books that had some butter in it, said that they needed some changing. They could have been better. But almost as a rule, the recipes never had butter. Ellen White used flesh meats for many years. She gradually got off the flesh meats until she was a vegetarian. Ellen White used butter for many years. She gradually got off the butter until in 1904 she says, "As for butter, I have settled the question. I do not use it." Now, her family may have continued using it. In fact, we know pretty well that they did. It wasn't on the table, but they could go into the pantry or into the icebox and get the butter and use it if they wanted to. She was never a disciplinarian to them. If their convictions told them not to use it, that was the way she wanted it. And I know that there's shopping lists passing around that are from the Ellen White home where that butter and oil were ordered on the shopping list. But some try to say that Ellen White was still using butter in 1909 and 1911 and 1913 because it was on the shopping list for the Ellen White home. Contrary to what Ellen White said, that she did not use it. That's not fair at all for somebody to come along and try to make a hypocrite out of Ellen White when she said she did not use it, she was a faithful health reformer. But we know that there were members in the family that used it and certainly it would appear on the shopping list. And the same with oil. Ellen White was opposed to any free fat or grease in the diet, as we've just read from these old Seventh-day Adventist statements. I hope that'll explain a little bit into the background of the early Seventh-day Adventist diet that we were given. Now, there is a good reason why milk and cream were included in the diet. It's not a necessary aspect of the diet, but it is something that you could use in limited quantities without getting into trouble. At least until disease increases in the animals to where it makes it unsafe for us to use those things. Now, we don't want to use large quantities. We don't want to guzzle milk like a calf. Man is really the only animal that continues drinking milk after he's weaned. It's not a necessary item in the diet, but if you do use it, I would recommend just using a small amount on your cereal in the morning and then don't drink it as a beverage the rest of the day. And Ellen White says that a little bit could be used as a seasoning in the vegetables. Now, when you use large quantities of cream, you're going to get into problems. We know in experimental animals that when we feed experimental animals a high-fat diet or a high-cream diet, that we can see their little red blood cells starting to clump together to where those little red blood cells that need to pass through those capillaries one by one, they're so small that if they clump together, they can't go through those capillaries two by two. And what happens when those red blood cells can't get through those little capillaries, when they can't carry their oxygen into those little capillaries? Your tissues are going to have less oxygen. And you remember the experiment I told you this morning, where this one doctor took and removed some of the oxygen away from the tissue, took it and removed it from the cells, and those cells turned malignant? It's very important that we do not use a lot of fat and grease in our diet, even in the form of milk and cream. Now, excuse me, did I say grease? I'm sorry. We don't label cream as grease. It's important that we do not use a lot of fat in our diet in the form of milk and cream, because it can cause those red blood cells to clump together. So if you use it, use it sparingly. Use it the way Ellen White said, a little bit. Possibly to season the vegetables with. Now that's really important. Well, I think what we ought to do is take just a little break and then come back, and I'd like to show you some pictures and describe some of the other things that we want to get into in the scientific area this afternoon. I would like to mention that cheese is also a grease. Any of your hard cheeses are grease. You can take cheese and warm it up just a little bit and rub your finger across it and it'll come away greasy. You can cook with cheese in your casserole and it'll come away, and the grease and fat will bubble up through the casserole, and you'll see it bubbling around on top of your casserole. That cheese is a free grease, and Ellen White says it's unfit for digestion. Well, now, this question that was just asked, what about soybean oil? The question always comes up, and during a seminar, there's always about a half a dozen different oils that are mentioned. And all of these, I'd like to make it very clear, are greasy and oily. You put your finger in that soybean oil and feel it and see if it's just not as greasy and oily, and then try to mix it with water and see what happens. It'll all float to the top. Any grease or any oil, we're not going to separate any of them out and say that they're all right. They're all labeled as grease in the early Seventh-day Adventist literature. Okay, well, back to cheese just for a moment, because the cream cheeses and the cottage cheeses are not included in that category. They are not a substance that is a free fat. So they are different. And Ellen White never really came down hard on those things. Or things like yogurt or the other fermented products that come from milk. I can't say that they're ideal or that we should use them in our diet. But if they are used, I would recommend they're used very carefully and very cautiously.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. Free listening of this message and over 7,000 other presentations by more than 100 speakers on 50 different topics is now available on our American Christian Ministries mobile app for Android and Apple devices, and on our secure website. You may also order presentations online at AmericanChristianMinistries.org or call 800-233-4450. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help to prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.